News, reviews and interviews with creative groups and individuals across the county's arts community. So join us for Creative Kingdom on the second Saturday of every month from 10:30 a.m. on Radio Kerry's Saturday Supplement. Brought to you in association with Kerry County Council.
Parenting advice on Talk About.
Now, a very warm welcome to Margaret Gilbert, who has just popped into studio in the last few minutes to chat to us. You're welcome, Margaret.
Thank you very much, Deirdre.
Now, we are going to talk about friendships. Now, I know we've spoken about this a few times before, but it's something that comes back again and again. And I think it's probably one of the top worries for parents. It could be that their child has friends but doesn't keep them, fights with friends, or maybe even has no friends. So maybe at the outset, will we talk first of all about how important friendships are?
Yeah.
To kids.
Yes, absolutely. I suppose when we talk about friendships and relationships, they're not just important to kids, aren't the basis of mental health and well-being for adults and children in life. Do you know, so it's so important when the children are young that they learn those skills. But we're often more overly focused now on the academics, and we forget that we need to teach children how to relate to other people. You often hear parents say they've no empathy, they only think of themselves. So we've kind of forgotten that element in the middle, that we have young people, these don't develop on their own, that we need to work at them from the home first, and then when they're out in the social situation and things, support them around it. But relationships are everything for mental health and well-being. We know ourselves, it's when relationships break down that often our mental health, you know, a lot of people are blessed with good mental health, whereas others are born with mental health that might be challenged and might have disorders and that kind of thing. But our mental health is never a given. And a huge part of that is around relationships. When marriages break up, when friendships break up, when there's bullying, it impacts everything. Our identity, our self-being, our sense of belonging. So they are very important for children. And I think a lot of parents get very emotional and upset and distressed when their children don't have friends. And when their children come home with stories about being left out and being dropped and all that kind of thing. So it often triggers a very deep emotional response in us. And I suppose what we try and do then is fix it and sort it for them. We try and go out there, we'll tell the teacher this is happening, we'll try and get someone to play with them and all that kind of thing. But actually, we need to teach them the skills of relationships. As we know in society, right, social media has an awful lot of isolating impact because you've less of those skills going on now, the connection between people in person. So it's all the more important that we keep our young people connected to that. The basic face-to-face and communicating, having fun around the table, family gatherings, all that kind of thing that teach the skills. And so I suppose, if our friendships aren't right, it causes an awful lot of problems. And one of the biggest problems it's causing at the moment is school avoidance, school can'ts. We often have children with one or two really, really close friends. If they're not going to school, the others won't go in because they have huge difficulty. You know, I suppose in our lifetime, we all have two or three. Some people might be luckier and have more really, really close friends. But we all have different groups that we dip in and out of as the needs be. So if my two friends weren't in when I was going to school, there might be another gang that you'd fit in and slot in with, and they'd be quite happy to have you. You know what I mean? And you'd stay with them for the day. You might say to them, can I hang round at lunch hour with you today because Mary's out or my friend is out or what have you. So you just find someone else to fall in with. But it doesn't mean to say you've gone away from your gang when they come back the next day. But our young people don't seem to have that flexibility. If the core group of children aren't there, they won't put themselves out there and say to someone else, can I sit next to you? Can I talk to you? So we've a lot of young people then in schools at lunch hour, in the mornings. They have that social anxiety, the group going into it in the morning, going from home and into school, seeing all that mayhem of people moving around there and trying to find their way in that, then trying to find relationships and connection and meaning. And then at lunch hour, if they don't have someone to hang around with, they completely lose it. They get anxious. You know, I suppose a big example of it is a young person now waiting outside of school for 10 minutes for a parent to rock up in a car, a busy parent rock them. They're mortified. The child is ashamed of that. They're mortified. They're out there waiting. People are looking at them. That's the things they say. So they're texting the parents. Where are you? Where are you? What are you doing? Why are you late? And we've very busy parents that might be coming across traffic, taking all that. So even the smallest little bits of discomfort and all that kind of thing, our children can't manage them.
What advice can you give to a child who struggles to make friends, Margaret?
Yeah, so I suppose it goes back to skills teaching, right? The skills teaching around relationships, it starts at home. How do we manage conflict? Do we shout and roar over it? Do we disconnect over it? Do we be silent over it? How do we manage conflict? We need to teach children that relationships aren't smooth. They have to be worked at all the time, that you don't just marry someone and you're great friends with them for the rest of your life and the relationship is like, how would you say, a fairy tale with a happy ending. You have to work at it. You have to do the romance. You have to do the time out. You have to respect each other, care for each other and all that kind of thing. So it starts at home, so the children can see that from parents. How do we sit down at the table and say, I have a problem, this isn't working for me, or he, you know, just say siblings fighting. The tendency is parents can't tolerate that anymore. They find it very difficult to hear it and listen to it. Now, I'm talking about the generalised sibling stuff, not something that goes into something that's
deeper
and belting, yeah, and hitting that isn't acceptable. Like, but what we should be doing with those children is sitting them at the table and saying, how are you going to resolve that conflict? We've intelligent young people that can get 600 pints in the leaving and they can't problem solve. They can't problem solve.
And is that because a whole generation of parents have been hell-bent on jumping in and solving things for them?
That's a big part of it. I suppose a lot of parents have come from an era where they weren't emotionally held and supported a lot of the time. Like we'd often hear people say, should we reared ourselves, you know? But there was a toughness about it as well that made us resilient. And a lot of parents said they don't want to give their children what they had, even though they might be quite happy in themselves, but they want to be emotionally available, do their best for them. But actually, our job is to support the children to navigate through their childhood, through their journey. So it's not about fixing. So like, if you have a child that's upset over a relationship, just say someone takes their lunch at school from them. They come home and say, Mary took my lunch today and she ate it all and I had nothing. So our temptation is immediately to think, she's been bullied. Did you tell the teacher? Is what we say to him. But actually, we need to evoke self-efficacy. I can do something about this, that it isn't all up to the teacher. So we might say something like, that, and she took your lunch while you were wide awake. So we're just being neutral and curious and getting that child to think, how did someone actually reach over and take your lunch and you didn't pull it away or you didn't anything, you know? So we're trying to evoke that child to think, if that was to happen you again, you might say something like to him, okay, if that was to happen tomorrow, if the same thing was to happen tomorrow, what was the first thing you might notice? So you might be able to get a child to reflect, okay, Mary looks round to check whose lunch she can take. So while Mary's around, I can remove my lunch. Do you know what I mean? That we don't have to sit and be passive recipients of these kind of behaviours on us. So if you have big catastrophes and traumas, you know, collective traumas like the Twin Towers and things. Some people develop post-traumatic stress disorder that survived it. Others didn't. And the difference between the two groups would be that the ones that didn't, they felt they could do something about their situation, even if it was only I ran at 100 miles an hour, so the second tower missed me. I helped a child under a fence and we survived it. We have that belief that we did something to help ourselves.
Okay, this is interesting.
Yeah. Whereas the other one is a helplessness. I couldn't do anything. I froze. I we're expecting everybody else
to rescue us.
To rescue us, yeah. And to manage it and mind it. And you see, a rescuer, right, is heroic. So if you rescue someone, great, well, well done, what have you. But if we've a child that needs to be rescued all the time, isn't that a very difficult place then to be living?
Yeah, I mean, you'd wonder what would happen to the child when they go away from home into the big bad world.
That's it. That's yeah. it. Now, it's what we need to do with them is skill them. So when a child comes home, I suppose I keep harping on about it a little, probably I'd be known reflective listening, Margaret, after. But when a child comes home with stuff, they don't need the solutions. They don't need the answers. They need us to sit with them, hear them, validate the emotion. So you were at school with Mary today and Mary wasn't very nice to you. So how did you manage with it? What did you do? That child, if that child didn't come home from school, didn't run out of class, didn't lose the plot, they managed it. So we say, you managed it. What did you do to help yourself in that so that you were able to stay in the class and not run away and lose the plot over it? So that child already has a little strategy for how they manage that. So that's what we must promote. You see, a young child inside in a classroom and there's a programme being shown on the screen. This is a scenario that a mother spoke about recently, but her child had a fear of certain noises and sounds and all that kind of thing. So there were sections of the film she didn't like. Now, this was in a primary school where they were just watching something. So the child said, I was afraid, I was terrified or what have you. So the mother said, and did you tell the teacher? Why didn't you tell the teacher? Now, expecting a 6 or 7 year old to have the courage to stand up and say, teacher, I don't like that. The courage to say it, the assertiveness to say it, but to be able to do it in front of her friends might be miles too much. So I said to the mother then, and did you ask her how she managed? So the mum said, you know, she did after a while, she did ask her how she managed. And the young one said, any time there was a scene I didn't like, I put my head down, pretended I was writing my essay, and I kept going. She said, nobody knew what I was doing, she says, and when it would be gone, I'd look up again.
So the child had figured it out herself.
Had figured it out herself.
Yeah.
But we jump into, we'll tell the teacher, will this, are they being bullied? Now, there are times we do need to step in. I'm not saying that we step back, but even if we have to step in, if we have to go to teachers and get support for the young person, we need to still keep coaching. It's coaching, not fixing. So,
okay, I was just going to say,
no bother.
I'm just jumping in to take a quick ad break, Margaret, but stay with us. And a reminder to listeners, Margaret Gilbert is talking today about friendships and giving your child the tools, if you like, to negotiate friendships themselves. If you have a question, 083 300 3300.
Parenting advice on Talk About.
Margaret, a listener says she has a granddaughter who has special needs and is in school. And she says sometimes the other kids won't let her join in playtime. And they say to her, you're different, you can't play. I think that is being bullied at school. What do you think?
Well, it's definitely a difficulty for children with neurodiversions and difficulties, do you know, learning difficulties and things in school, fitting in with the groups and the cliques isn't easy. But I suppose we need to support that little girl to try and figure out, are there other children in that playground that aren't with that group? Are there other children that she could target to play with? Now, if if she does need to go to a teacher for support and things, maybe she might need an SNA or something to foster relationships for her in the playground, getting a school to have a buddy chair so that if they see a young person in the school sitting on that chair at lunch hour, that everybody knows they need a friend and go to it. But often children with neurodivergence are really poor at relationships. So I'd be skills teaching that little girl, you know, with little scripts. If she wants to ask someone in the playground to play with them, you know, has she little script learnt off? Hi, I've no one to play with, or I'd love to play skipping, or I'd love to play this game, or can I join in with you? Often they hang around in the peripheral and it's easy to kind of push them off. So we need to skill them up. Relationships are very difficult for them, and having the skills to engage are difficult.
We've another listener who has a 13-year-old daughter in first year, feels that her best friend has pulled away from her and she's very upset about it. What will I say to her?
Yeah, so that's I love that kind of an example now. Yeah. So we can't fix it for her. We can't sort it for her, but we can sit with her. We can sit with her and say, I hear you. You're really, really upset about your friend. Give her space, give her time to talk it out. And we're always trying to get to the fixing end of it. But we, you know, so we stay away from that for as long as we can. Let her get it out. Let her talk about it. Our tendency would be to say to her, don't bother with her now. If she comes back in 6 weeks' time, don't be answering the phone to her. Don't be answering all that kind of thing. They're the kind of things we must let to the young person. That's given instruction. She might want to try out that relationship 3 more, 4 times before she decides it's not really for me. So it's sitting with her. I hear you. It's really, really upsetting when someone does that to you. How do you take care of yourself when you're feeling like that? That's what she needs to do. There's a sadness about it. A loss of a relationship is a minor grief. Do you know what I mean? I'm not equating it with the grief of a death or something, but a loss of a friendship, loss of company, loss of connection. So it's sitting with her, helping her explore. That's a big feeling. How are you going to take care of yourself? Would you like time on the couch? Would you like to you know, do a bit of journaling around it? Are there other friends you can connect in with? What's the last shoe at school, you might ask her? So you might find out how much of a role that person was playing with her around the lunch hour and the break time and all that kind of thing. So you might say to her, are there other people you can tune into that look on the outside? And what we're trying to teach them is these are relationships. This is the way they happen. So we need to teach them about conflict resolution. So it might be a relational gesture. You could say to her, do you think something happened between you? Or do you think she was upset over something? Could you send her a nice message? Could you send her a relational gesture? It might be a little bracelet. It might be something very, very small. So we're trying to teach them to make repair. But the biggest lesson might be of all teaching that young person, there's some things out of our control. Mm-hmm. And we can't change it. That we do whatever we can. And if it brings that person back closer to us, and things great, but it may not.
Our boys' friendships are different then, aren't they? They don't seem to fall out as much as girls.
You see, boys tend to be rough and tumble, and they tend to fight it out a bit more than things. I suppose it's the male way of doing it. And I suppose there is a tendency to think that boys don't engage in that kind of snipering and underneath gossiping and things, but we kind of know now they do good. They do a bit of that as well.
Yeah.
You know, they can be cutting and things they say and do can be bad. But boys do get caught up in it as well. And I think mentally for boys, if they're caught up in poor relationships and bullying and that kind of thing, it has a huge impact on their sense of being, because we haven't moved very far in society in men still having the role of being very masculine, and that they don't cry and that they should be able to manage all this kind of stuff. You know, but I suppose for me, everything goes back to emotional intelligence. that when our children come home with us upset over relationships, upset over this, we teach them to deal with the emotions that come up around it. You know, not to fix, to sort, but that's really hurting for you. I can see it. How can you help yourself? What can you do differently? So we're getting them to understand and know themselves as people. And I suppose that's the real source of well-being in life.
Margaret, before we run out of time, I know you have two events coming up that you want to mention.
Yes, there's the Morning Melt, Battling the Morning Struggles and Spotting School Avoidance Early in Primary School. That's a workshop that I'm doing there with Listowel Family Resource Centre, and that's on Wednesday the 18th of February.
That's next week, yeah.
That's next week. And now people have to book in there if they want to go, but it is a free event. So the number for that is 068-23584 if people are interested in it. And I'm teaming up with Mary Lucy, your careers advisor there, and we've developed a 6-1 program. So it's kind of a coaching program that works with both parents for 4 sessions, and we do 6 to 8 sessions then with the young people. So what we're trying to support there is emotional intelligence, study skills, helping the young person transition smoothly from 6th class to 1st year. So we support the parents how to positively support the young person through that, because what we are finding is school avoidance begins in primary school, and that transition from primary to 2nd is really, really difficult for our students and actually for parents as well. So getting in there early, trying to build the skills in advance of it, often helps the transition. Now, that is a paid course and things, but if people are interested, you can check it out on my website. That's gilbertmlifecoaching@gmail.com.
Oh, that's your email address, is it?
That's the email address. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes, that's it. Good job. You're listening, Deirdre.
I am listening, yes. You meant to give your website, which is margaretgilbert.com.
margaretgilbertlifecoaching.com.
Brilliant. Two great courses coming up, Margaret. And some lovely comments in for people who love listening to you and really love your advice. Thank you so much. We'll see you next month.
See you next month.
We're going to take a break, folks. We have another really interesting guest for you to meet up next.